Yeah.
Okay. So, friends, I'm not sure we're going to have more than one shear on Lush. I tried to make this as comprehensive as possible. We'll see if there are still a whole host of outlying practical examples maybe that we don't get to. But I think this will probably suffice for this malacha, at least as an overview of this malacha. I will try. For anybody listening to this on the recording, this is going to make very, very little sense without the actual flow chart that we have. So I'll try to put it up on YUTower along with the actual recording of the shiur so you can download and make sense of it. But a brief word of introduction, and both an introduction as to the malacha itself and then also an explanation as to why this malacha, more so than others, or at least more so than Boer, which we dealt with previously, why this lends itself and why this demands something like a flowchart. This is what appealed to me, but it needs more of a tangible outline and a step-by-step sort of scheme in order to process this malacha more than others. First and foremost, Lush, going back to the time of the actual Mishkan, what exactly was being done in the Mishkan that would have necessitated Lush? We usually think of it along the lines as kneading dough, although the reality is that, at least according to most Rishonim, it is not the case that the production of bread in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Mishkan would have been the source for any actual malacha. The source for what we call malacha on Shabbos stemmed from those malachos, those acts of labor that would have been critical in the construction, the very construction of the Mishkan, but not the day-to-day servicing of the Mishkan. So as much as they, on an ongoing basis, would require lechem hapanim and would have required karbanos mincha and the like, that's not where the actual malachos stem from. But rather, let's say, when they were mashing and concocting the different dyes that they would need to actually dye the textiles and the fabrics and things like that in the Mishkan, that's when it would be necessary. So that becomes an important starting point, right? That the starting point for Lush is not necessarily a dough, but might actually be something like a paste, like mashing berries or things like that, to be able to achieve this paste that would then be used for dyeing. That's issue number one, just something to be mindful of, and we'll dig a little bit deeper into an actual definition of what this malacha is really all about. But just by way of first trying to explain why we have this whole complicated, it's not that complicated, we'll deal with it, but this whole flowchart in front of us, is that we find an unusual reality when it comes to Lush that I don't believe you find with respect to any other malacha. Maybe there are others, but certainly it's most prominent when it comes to Lush, which is as follows. Ordinarily, any manner in which I perform a malacha is going to be usur. So that even if I perform the malacha in a backhanded, unusual sort of manner, it's still going to be usur. It just might knock down the degree of isur a notch. So, if let's say performing borer in the most simple capacity would be, let's say, utilizing a kli and pouring the pasta and water, it's all mixed up, it's a tarovas, pour it through a colander, pour it through a strainer. So that would be absolute borer. If you could concoct a manner of doing that exact same malacha in a backhanded kind of way, right, kil achar yad, if I would do it, let's say, I would invert the kli or something like that. I would do it in a manner that is not typically, not usually done, so that might fall short of maleches machsheves, right? It might fall short of the ideal manner in which you would ordinarily perform the malacha, but would nevertheless be an iser derabanan, even if not an iser deoraisa. So ordinarily, the idea of trying to do something in a bizarre, odd kind of fashion doesn't really save me when it comes to an actual fulfillment of Shabbos properly. Keeping Shabbos properly just means that I might only be doing so, or might only be in violation on a derabanan level, but not a deoraisa level. What we find when it comes to Lush is that is no longer the thinking. That's no longer the reality. And that when it comes to Lush, if I employ a substantial enough change in the manner in which it's done, it actually becomes completely mutter. And that in of itself requires a lot of explanation. When we employ that change, how we go about doing it, what the change looks like, it doesn't mean that we're given license to just come up with any bizarre way of doing so completely on our own. But if we were to do so in the manner described by Chazal and the various Gemaras dealing with this malacha, so then we would actually be completely clear of the malacha altogether. That's really, really unusual. And when that's actually applied is in of itself rather difficult. So what I would like to do is basically work through this top to bottom, deal with what the malacha is, the kinds of things that we should be conscious of, the questions that we need to ask ourselves, and then as we do, I'll try to point out some practical examples along the way, and hopefully from those you can then further apply it to any one of the myriad scenarios in which this malacha might actually rear its head in your own kitchens, homes, and personal Shabbos observance. First and foremost, what exactly is lush? Lush, if I had to give a definition, would be the combination of small particles into one mass. And that can happen in all kinds of different ways, but it is the combination of a number of different particles, I'd say, with a liquid medium. Let's say that. Employing a liquid medium to combine disparate particles into one unified mass. Yeah, let's say that. That'll work. So the first question is this actually gush echad? Is this actually one cohesive mass? Or are they still individual particles that might just be sort of suspended in liquid? Example, two, let's say, obvious examples. Making a salad. So when you make a regular salad, regular like green salad, you're tossing the salad with dressing, you're introducing a liquid medium into this bowl full of solids, but they're not really clinging together. Maybe you have a couple of pieces of lettuce that stick together, but they're not really clinging together in any... Ah, we just got younger. All right. They're not really clinging together in any meaningful sort of way, right? Or at least certainly not to the degree that we would say that, yeah, this is one collective mass at this point, one cohesive mass at this point. Same with, let's say, something like potato salad. You have large chunks of potatoes, you're tossing with a dressing, mayo, oil, vinegar, whatever. But even if they're clinging to some degree, you'll get a couple of potatoes that maybe stick together. For the most part, it's not actually one mass. Compare and contrast that to, let's say, making tuna and egg salad. So making tuna and egg salad, what you really end up with is really one block, one blob, right? It's all much more cohesive. It's really become one mass. Big question as to whether or not you can, even by the time we're done with all this, can you or can you not make tuna and egg salad on Shabbos? That is a big question. But at the very least, it is worthy of the question of lush, right? Because you're dealing with something that is, it's become a cohesive kind of mass. You pick up, you pick your spoon up out of it, and it's not that that all that will be on that spoon is whatever fits inside of it, but it kind of globs around the entire spoon. Another practical example. Let's say you have a huge mound of, let's say, like granola, right, in a yogurt. So it depends on, like, yeah, is it like, why don't you put a little yogurt in your granola? Or is it that the granola is really like a topping for the yogurt? But if you have this mass of granola inside of a yogurt, that all really is just being held together by the yogurt, so then that could also be an issue of lush. Compare and contrast that. My kids love these things. The Yo Crunch, right? Love them. Super popular. So I was just thinking about this with Pas Shabbos. The Oreo ones, right? With the Oreo crumbs, you pour it into the yogurt. Those are just really little like flecks of cookie crumbs that are being suspended in the yogurt. It's not a ball of crumbs that's now being held together cohesively by the actual yogurt itself. So those would be distinctions. That's what you have to try to compare and contrast. Are these individual particles that are being held together into one mass by the liquid that was introduced into it? Or are they really just suspended in this liquid, I don't know, kind of firmament? Another example that I saw is, let's say, sprinkling dried herbs into tchina, hummus, something like that. Right, so you mix it together. So now you have those individual leaves, so individual parsley leaves, individual specks of or flecks of za'atar. Right, is that now like a za'atar clump? No, those are individual flecks that are being held in suspension in this in this liquid, in the hummus, in the tahin, or whatever it is. So that is fundamentally and primarily the first question that we have to ask ourselves when it comes to lush. Is this a series of particles that are now being held together in one mass? If that's the case, then you very, very much have a shayla of lush on your hands. The other question, maybe this is even the question that comes before the previous one, I don't know, they're about even with one another, is are you thickening or are you diluting? The idea of lush is that you're taking these individual particles and now you're holding them together. If those particles are already held together and now you're just introducing further liquid that's going to actually thin out that mixture, that's not lush anymore. So consider the distinction, let's say, between preparing tahina from the outset versus having pre-made tahina that you want to water down a little bit with water, with lemon juice, with whatever it is that you're adding. I mentioned this in the men's shir. I don't know if anybody do like fresh, you know, quote unquote fresh tahina at home. Get the store bought, like where you just pull off the thing, or you're like actually mixing the. Nobody's mixing the stuff. You have it.
I don't serve
it's in the
by
back.
Itself.
It's in the back of the. It's as a something in something else. It's an ingredient.
Okay, so, yes.
It's an ingredient. So I don't know. Try this at home because one of the guys in the shir on Monday noted the same. It is the most bizarre little miracle supernatural act that takes place in your own kitchen. You start off with the tahina paste, and you add water. You're adding a liquid, and it makes it thicker. I don't know how it works. I don't know how it happens, but without fail. Add a few drops of water, and you give it a swirl, and it becomes really basically like a dough, almost. So doing that from the outset on Shabbos would be really, really problematic. Somehow or another, the individual particles, molecules, whatever it is that's part of the tahina is becoming thicker by means of the introduction of water. Compare that to, let's say, if you buy like a pre-made sabra or achla or whatever, and it's just too thick and you want to water it down with a little more lemon juice, a little more water, that's something that's already effectively what it is, and now you're just further diluting it. Diluting is never an act of lush. It's the exact opposite of lush. So that's where the actual definition becomes very important in terms of conceptualizing any similar kind of act. Does it really fit the model? Does it really fit the mold of what lush actually is? Or does it not? So if I am diluting as opposed to thickening, I'm really never going to run afoul of lush. You do need to be careful. You could have a scenario in which, let's say, you have something that in theory is already made, right? It's already manufactured. And because it's dried out, it's now back at a state of being turned back into individual particles. And then even though I'm theoretically diluting, I'm not really diluting it, I'm actually reconstituting it. Right? Distinction between reconstituting and diluting. Diluting is that it's already held together as one mass, as opposed to if the liquid has evaporated out of it to the degree that now it's really crumbled all over again, I'm actually reconstituting it, that really could be lush all over again. So buyer beware.
Do you have an example of that?
I could make one up that might not actually work this way, but let's say something like, olive dip or something like that, right? That gets dry, that's just like left out in the fridge without any cover or anything on it, and gets really, really dry so that it's like almost crumbly all over again. You put in a little more oil or water or whatever, and that might actually help to solidify it again.
When you make matzo balls.
When you make matzo balls.
Water.
The batter.
Yeah.
The batter.
It'll be thin, but then if you leave it away again, it'll thicken.
Yeah, it's certainly, right. In terms of the actual properties, this is a very good example. Practically, that might be mukta, at least on Shabbos in the first place, because it's sort of inedible in its current state. But right, but that kind of, I don't know what that stuff would be, but that's sort of a mixture that might dry out and then you're left with like individual crumbly particles. You add liquid and that could reconstitute it. That could be problematic.
Adding liquid, even though later on it could reseparate, it's still considered.
Even though it could reseparate. So separating this, that's another good example.
Like something that's going to naturally separate anyway.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So
it's going to rise to the.
Yeah, that's a great example. So let's say something like a samat bucha might not even be subject to lush in the first place. So let's say...
Well, peanut butter
Turkish salad. Peanut butter. Great. Natural peanut butter. So mixing. Oh, that's also a good example because sometimes it gets a little crumbly. You know what I mean? It gets a little like powdery down at the bottom. You got to be careful with that. But otherwise, if it's still basically a like a paste, right, or a schmear, if you will, and it just gets thick, and now you're mixing that oil back inside, that's not really reconstituting. That's really just diluting it all over again. Similar with, let's say, something like Turkish salad, right? Something that's a little bit thicker, olive dip. Things that are thicker in the first place would be subject to lush. I don't know that matbucha really would be in the first place. But thick matbucha or like eggplant salad, something like that, that's really being held together and it's thick. And then the oil rises to the top. By giving it a stir, all you're doing is reintroducing the oil and re-diluting it, but it really already is in that state of already being a kneaded, you know, paste in the first place. Not kneaded, but, you know, mixed or prepared paste in the first place. Okay, assuming we're dealing with something that is going from, let's say, individual particles to one collective mass, and assuming that the process is also indeed actually thickening it as opposed to just diluting it, then this becomes a very, very, really fundamental distinction, halachic distinction, which gets a little bit difficult to assess on our own, but we have some guidance. That is the question of belila ava versus belila raka. Belila ava means a thick sort of consistency. Belila raka is a more thin or runny sort of consistency, and that makes a huge difference. If we're dealing with a thick consistency, then we approach a whole number of issues, potential isser d'oraisa as opposed to an isser d'rabbanan. We have a little bit more latitude when it comes to a thinner consistency, a more runny consistency than a thick one. If we sometimes define lush as being kneading, although again that's not really fair, but if sometimes we use that terminology, sometimes we use that translation or definition, stands to reason that the thicker that concoction is, the more difficult or the more at risk will be of actual transgression when we're dealing with that sort of consistency in the first place. What halachically is the distinction between the two? What's considered to be thick and what's considered to be thin for these purposes? So the Chazon Ish writes as follows. He says that it is considered to be, he's not so much differentiating between thin versus thick as much as thin versus complete absolute just liquid. So he says as follows, that it is considered to be a belila raka if it can be poured from a kli to a kli. If it can be poured out of the bowl, if it can be poured out of a cup, so then it is considered to be, it'll run out of the cup, then it is considered to be a thin consistency. So I'll give you an example. So tchina is another example, right? If you have the already prepared tchina and you turn the bowl upside down, it'll just run, spill all over the floor, or hopefully you put something else there to catch it. If you take the paste and you mix that with a little bit of water, in the early stages of that mixing process, you could hold the bowl upside down for 10 minutes and it's not going anywhere. It is stuck. So it's basically like a dough. It's like a real solid. You pour batter, you don't really pour dough. If you turn a bowl that has challah dough upside down, ultimately it'll fall, but it's not really being poured, as opposed to, let's say, like cake batter, brownie batter, something like that. Or let's say this, cake batter versus cookie batter. Right? Cookie batter is really a dough. They don't call it batter, they call it cookie dough, don't they? Yeah. That's well done. Good job, Ben and Jerry's. A couple of Lantzmann. And if you're dealing with something that's more even like a very viscous, syrupy kind of consistency, still that will certainly be subject to lush, but a little bit more leniency could be applied. This is all as opposed to, so what does the Chazon Ish say? As opposed to something that's really just, he calls it like mayim achurim, like murky, cloudy water. Think about the kinds of things he actually mentions this. Powders that are just dissolvable into water, making crystal light. And iced tea and Kool-Aid or like, you know, fruit punch out of a drink mix, all totally mutter. Making instant coffee on Shabbos, totally mutter. Hot cocoa. So I wanted to talk about this. So making hot cocoa, you dump hot cocoa mix into even hot water. Again, assuming you're avoiding all Bishul issues and that kind of thing, no problem whatsoever. You're really only making a liquid. You're not making anything that would be considered a batter or a paste. It's certainly not subject to lush. However, this is one of my finer discoveries. When I was, I was young. I was a real Eloy as a child. It occurred to me at some point that if you make hot cocoa by putting the packet in the mug and then adding the amount of hot water that you're supposed to add for a full cup, and then you try to mix it, you end up with a lot of these little flecks of the dry powder that never really mixes. So what do? You mix it with a little bit of hot water, and you make it into like a syrupy kind of paste, and then you mix that with hot, it's like tempering eggs. And then you mix that with more hot water, and then you get your whole nice cup of hot chocolate. That's the way to do it. The problem is that when you do so, you're likely running afoul of Lush on Shabbos, because that syrup that you're making in the bottom of the mug, that paste that you're making, really is at least potentially, it's subject to Lush, because it's thicker, it can still be poured, but it's thicker, it's not just liquid, it's not just like a colored or flavored liquid, but it's really a different consistency altogether. So what difference does it make? What do you have to do? Okay, here is where we get into the concept of shinui. By the way, one other item to be aware of is, you know, let's speak about the shinui first, and then we'll go from there. So the concept of shinui, I mentioned this at the beginning, that ordinarily when you employ a shinui in the performance of a malacha, it doesn't really do anything in terms of making it permissible. It just knocks it down from being a da'oraisa to a dirabanan. If I find a bizarre means of, let's say, carrying outside the eruv, so that I'm not really like holding it in a normal sort of capacity, but I affix it to my clothing somehow or another, or I carry it in my left hand, I'm really righty, whatever it is, so that's still a violation of carrying, it might just not be so on a da'oraisa level. What we find when it comes to Lush is that there are certain kinds of shinuyim, certain kinds of shtick and tricks and differences that you can employ that actually remove this from being considered a malacha altogether. Now, there are two stages at which that is possible. There's a lot of background in the Gemara on this, but here's the upshot, that effectively, there are two different stages at which you can employ a shinui, and two different stages that we need to be mindful of when we are mixing these items together, liquid with the solid. Stage number one is when the liquid is first introduced. When the liquid is first introduced, that in of itself may be a malacha, and therefore a shinui potentially needs to be employed. Stage number two is when I'm mixing it, which is probably much more intuitive, that should be considered the act of lisha, should be considered the act of mixing or of concocting, kneading, whatever, and that I might also need to employ a shinui then, okay? Here is the problem, and this is why there's this important distinction between belila ava and belila raka. I'll need to employ a shinui at both of those stages. The problem is that the first brand of shinui only works for a belila raka. So I need to employ a shinui both when I first add the liquid and also when I actually mix the liquid in together with the solid. But that first one only is viable if I'm dealing with a more runny, loose sort of consistency, not if I'm dealing with something that almost at least takes on the qualities of actual dough. So on the belila ava side, skip over that issue about thin or thick for a second. We'll get back to that. But when I'm first introducing a liquid, there's really no shinui that is possible. There's no viable shinui that I can employ. And therefore, I need to, I basically need to avoid that altogether. If it's ultimately going to be a belila ava, if it's going to be really thick, because there's no means that I have of employing a shinui when I first introduce or when I first combine the liquid with the solid, therefore there's no way of actually creating or processing a belila ava on Shabbos. So if we're dealing with something like this, is why tchina becomes problematic. So if you're dealing with something like tchina, right, turning the paste into actual tchina, into the actual prepared food or dip or salad or whatever, there's really no way of going about doing it. The moment I pour the water in, I've already run afoul of Lush. So even if I could mix it in a strange sort of way, I can never, there's no means of having the water and the tchina paste actually meet each other in the first place in a manner that would be permissible. That is usser from the outset. With three exceptions. three scenarios in which we say that performing a Shinui for Balila Ava might actually be acceptable, might actually be appropriate. So he gave you here lenient scenarios, three scenarios in this in which you could go about employing the Shinui. Number one, if it needs to be fresh. Needs to be fresh doesn't just mean that I particularly like trina in the first 10 minutes after the paste hits the water, after the paste hits the lemon juice. Fresh means that if I had done it before Shabbos, it would have been spoiled, or would really have been, the taste really would have been ruined. I actually could not think offhand of a scenario, but let me know if you think of anything. But if that would really be the case, that particularly, you know, we have refrigeration now, and it's, you know, even if we're, if we've become more foodies than we ever were, still refrigeration slows down the process of spoilage and of developing, taking on funny flavors and odors and things like that. But at least theoretically, if there was such a scenario in which it would need to specifically be made on Shabbos, otherwise the taste would be ruined, then it would be permissible to do so on Shabbos. Again, only if I also employ a Shinui. Number one. Number two is baby. That doesn't mean that you are kneading the baby. That means if you are doing the kneading for the baby, for the baby. So this is a huge deal because this happens all the time. That's like baby cereals. Baby cereals, depending on how thick or how runny you're making them, especially if you're starting off enough, sometimes you do like the, you make it particularly thick and then you like mix it afterwards with like the, I don't know, the vial, like the, oh, I was going to say like the strained, you know, like the peaches or the, you know, like the jar, right? So it might really be thick from the outset. So that's another scenario in which you could be mako, and it would be permissible as long as we're employing a shinui ahead of time when they first meet, when the rice cereal first meets the water, that would be okay. Finally, if it's really a shas adchak, meaning shas adchak would mean like this is what I was planning on having for lunch and everything's going to be ruined and I've spent a lot of money and it's going to be terrible. So then you could ask a non-Jew. Ordinarily, Amir La'akum is, of course, not permissible on Shabbos. And again, in this case, we're not really employing the work of the non-Jew on Shabbos for anything that's really usher. It's just we're being more lenient, and there is room for leniency, although the minhag beyond these three scenarios is to be machmir and to assume that you cannot prepare a Balila Ava because of this issue. If something has a thick consistency, there's really no way to go about doing it except for these three scenarios.
Can you mix hot oatmeal and make it from instant?
Ah, okay. So, yes, a few provisos. Can we come back to that? Vivian, can you remind me? Yeah.
Okay, what was the last one? The non-Jew?
If it's a shas adchak, right? Meaning not just like any scenario where I want to get it done, but if I really need this for some reason.
Like you're a caterer or something.
Yeah, or if this is, or if, I don't know, somehow this is like what I was planning, this is what we're going to eat for. Not that, oy vavoy, you know, I have this, I got this big, nice Hamish water challah from pomegranate, and like I was planning on serving three different types of hummus. I only made two of them before Shabbos, and we have the za'atar hummus, we have the al hummus, I wanted to have the charisa hummus, and I'm not going to have the charisa hummus, so that's like shasad chak, let's ask the neighbors. You know, it, like this is the mainstay of what we're going to eat, or Kiddush is going to be absolutely ruined, or like a lot of money was spent, or that kind of thing. So then asking non-Jew, if there's really going to be a substantial loss, then you can even ask a non-Jew to do actual malacha on Shabbos. So this would be even less than that, but something that you really very, very much need. Those would be the scenarios you could be lenient in general. What if I'm not being lenient? What if I'm dealing with a Blila Raka, and then it would be completely within permissibility to just introduce the liquid to the solid or the liquid to the paste or whatever, even if it's going to thicken it. But what I'm really ending up with, because of the quantity of liquid that I'm adding, I'm only going to end up with a Balila Raka. I'm only going to end up with something that's of thin consistency in the first place. So then what do I need to do? I need to employ a Shinui. What does the Shinui look like? Shinui looks like reversing the order. Reversing the order. If ordinarily what you do is, so let's talk about oatmeal. If you have an oatmeal packet, at least this is the way that I think that this is always done. Oatmeal packet goes in the bowl and then you pour in the hot water. Am I, yeah, right, consensus? Yes, great. So let's say you first pour in the hot water and then you introduce the oatmeal afterwards, which by the way just seems to be the typical manner of doing these things in general. The Gemara actually puts it in the reverse order, which might have some might have some halachic bearing, according to some poskim. Talks about it being sort of a chiddush to first pour the water into the flour, as opposed to, like, that's what would be odd. Pouring the water into the flour would be bizarre, and that constitutes the shinoi. Okay, I don't know how people do make dough today necessarily versus how they used to, but certainly that would seem correct. That would seem the rule of thumb. If you're making a bowl of oatmeal goes in first, liquid goes in second. A shinoi would be to put it in the reverse order. When would that be acceptable? If we're on the bli l'raka side, if we're on the thinner consistency side as opposed to thick consistency. If it's a thick consistency, that's not mutter. If it's a thin consistency, then it is mutter. What's the distinction between thin and thick? So again, back to the Chazon Ish, where if it's pourable. I don't know. People like their oatmeal different consistencies. You know, I like mine kind of runny. Some people like to cut their oatmeal with a knife and fork, whatever, or a chainsaw. So if it's going to be runny, if it's the kind of thing that you could pour, that it would run and it would pour from one bowl to the next, then that could be considered to be a balila raka, thin consistency, put it in the reverse order. That would at least be step number one.
Question.
Yeah.
So the intention is to make a balila raka and they accidentally, they don't put in enough water. And
right.
Being thicker than...
So in the interim, that's a balila ava, meaning if you're pouring in all in one fell swoop enough water to really make it a balila raka, then you're okay. That's like the cocoa issue, right? If you're putting in just a little bit of water at first, by the way, you could put in so little water, you just put in a couple of drops of water into the hot cocoa mix, that could actually be a balila ava, right? My intent was to make it into a balila raka. So I put in a few teaspoons of water, maybe something like that. You just misjudge it. I figure I probably need two tablespoons of water in order to make my little hot cocoa paste like in the bottom of the mug before I add in the rest of the water. And I grabbed a teaspoon instead of a tablespoon. And the next thing you know, I have like a blue lava on my hand. So that would be a malacha b'shogeg. Right, that I mean, it'd be a problem. It was inadvertent or accidental. It was a misjudge. That's like not in the category of, you know, whenever it was a couple of weeks ago, I think, if maybe a month ago already, we were discussing, and I think it was 2 weeks ago, we were talking about borer. Borer needs to be miyad, right? It needs to be immediately for this seuda. Well, so can I make extra food? Can I make like enough so that I know that there will probably be extra pieces of chicken on the serving plate, or is that not okay? So there we said, like, you know, that's part of the way that you're, like, you don't have to judge, you know, exactly right. That's part of the natural order of serving a seuda. This is, you gotta really be careful. You gotta really be careful. Always err on the side of more liquid, not less liquid. Or, you know, try not to have hot cocoa on Shabbos, I don't know.
So
or make it ahead of time.
You can't benefit from it. You accidentally
create a... That's a good question. I'm not sure. In this instance, I would bet you could benefit from it. See, I don't want to get into this background so much, but there's a question as to whether or not the introduction of the liquid into the solid in the first place is really a malacha or not. For the most part, we hold, or if at least it's the real isser of lush in the first place or not. For the most part, we assume that it is not a real malacha. Vast majority of Rishonim, vast majority of poskim assume that it's not a real malacha. There is a very, very small minority opinion that holds that it is a malacha. The minhag is to be careful for that opinion. And because we're being careful for that opinion, therefore we don't abide by any, a shinui when it comes to introducing the liquid to the solid, when it comes to a balila ava, if that's not yet enough to make your head spin. What would that mean? That would likely mean that after the fact, you could still use it. That's what I would assume. That after the case or after the fact, after you've already done it, that you could still actually use it. But certainly we're machmir lechatchila. If that wasn't the case, right? If we said that absolutely this is really a malacha, we would never have this lenient scenarios, you know, where we want to eat food that's like really fresh, therefore you could violate Shabbos, right? It's not really a malacha. It's sort of a loosening of the minhag to be machmir, even though most opinions hold that you can be mekel, if you followed all that.
So the hot cook was an issue. Let's say if you put enough water first and then the powder.
If you put enough water and then you put in the powder, so then you'd have a Belila Raka, right? Which would mean that if you're putting in, let's say, a few tablespoons of water in the bottom, pouring in the hot cocoa mix, that way you're going to get this like syrupy stuff in the bottom. So that would be a Belila Raka, which would mean that as long as you're putting them in the reverse order, let's say water first, powder second, I think that would be the reverse order, then that would be, then at least that phase of it has been done beheter. Then we'll have to talk about, okay, well, how do you actually go about mixing it, right? That you need to employ a shinui in terms of mixing it also. But putting in the water first and then putting in the hot cocoa mix afterwards, that would certainly be okay, at least as far as that stage of lush is concerned.
And I'm saying even with like the floaty pieces, that's still fine? Like the clumps?
Floating, I mean, it's not fine. That's just not good eats. I mean, that's not so delicious.
Oh, what some people like the floaty clumps.
If you like floaty, then what's the problem in the first place?
You could absolutely like things held together now, like those powder pieces, like they're kind of individually thick pieces.
That's not real. I mean, at most, you're talking about a Belila Raka because it's right. But you're probably talking if you're talking about a full mug of hot water, you pour hot cocoa mix into it. That's what the Chazon Ish was talking about when he spoke about like soluble powders that you're dissolving into water. That's a liquid. That's not really subject to lush in the first place. If you want to do the shtick of like making the the cocoa batter at the bottom of the cup first, so then you just have to make sure that you're adding enough water ahead of time that it becomes runny as opposed to a real solid paste. Turn the mug upside down and it doesn't go anywhere. But if it runs, then it's a Belila Raka. So far, so good. Certainly, if you put a full mug of hot water and you dump the contents into that, whatever little pieces are left. But it's that's a drink. That's a beverage. That's not subject to lush in the first place. That would certainly be okay. Certainly be okay.
Even if it doesn't all dissolve.
If it doesn't all dissolve, then it's not. Then bichlal, it's not lush, right? The issue of lush is that they're being held together by the liquid,
uh-huh.
Right? Okay. Right. So if you get something like a paste or something like that.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise. Assuming that's considered thick.
Yeah.
So that's why you can't do tuna and egg salad and things of that nature.
Okay. So,
however,
yeah.
I'm just going to add to the question before you go. My kids have consistency issues. So if I take pre-made egg salad that's too thick and they want it to be thinner, I'll add mayo and mix it again. But it's already mixed
diluting.
In the first place.
So that's certainly diluting.
But then why is it not diluting to make it in the first place if you're taking something solid like an egg and mashing it?
What we're talking about when we speak about lush is you're talking about individual particles that are now being held together by some sort of liquid medium, right? In that case, that's already happened. It's already gush echad. It's already a cohesive mass when you take the prepared egg salad. What you're doing by adding an additional liquid, even though it's a thick liquid, you're still ultimately diluting it from the current state that it's already in.
It's upside down. I don't think it runs, right?
It'll run. I mean, whether it does or it doesn't, it's not a solid. It's not that's individual true. Particles that you're meaning that would be the difference between, let's say, putting in more egg and putting in more mayo. Putting in more egg, I might be in a position where now I'm holding those pieces of egg together with whatever liquid is already in the egg salad as opposed to the mayo.
Gotcha.
I'm glad you brought up mayo because I want to just come back to this one block right underneath Belila Ava. One thing to be aware of, where another scenario in which we are makel, it's not really one of these lenient scenarios, but when we're makel, what this whole conversation about Belila Ava being a problem and not being able to employ a shinui is when you're using a liquid that's a thin liquid in the first place, like a real liquid, water, vinegar, oil. If you use some medium that in the first place is really much thicker, then we don't have this concern in the first place. Effectively, here's the concern, that the moment I pour in the water, I've already done something really substantial. If I pour water into flour, you could hear that argument to a much greater degree than if I pour, I don't know why you do this, but mayo into breadcrumbs or something like that. From the outset, nothing is dissolving into the water and creating this new paste. What you're doing is likely from the first addition is you're having these individual flecks that are being suspended in the mayo, but not really that they're held to one another by virtue of the liquid. They're actually being suspended in the liquid like itself. So that's a different reality. Where does this come up? So back to, let's say, tuna and egg salad, even though what you'll ultimately end up with is likely a Balila Ava, we need not be concerned about the introduction of the mayo into the tuna or the mayo into the egg salad in of itself. Right? That in of itself doesn't pose a problem, so therefore we'll only need to be concerned about employing a shinui when it comes to actually combining them together and mixing them together afterwards. Another scenario. I know this is not the proper way to make Rice Krispies treats, but I've seen it done. Really, you're supposed to melt the fluff together with margarine, and then you mix it with Rice Krispies, right? All in the pot, and then you pour it into the pan, and then you press it. I've actually seen this, that like a very like quick, easy way of doing Rice Krispies treats is just dump out the thing of marshmallow fluff, dump in the box of Rice Krispies treats, and just like press them down, throw them in the fridge to get them a little more solidified, and that's it. Could you do that on Shabbos? Could you do that on Shabbos? So at least as far as that initial stage of Rice Krispies into the fluff, that in of itself isn't a problem, even though likely where you're headed is Balila Av. I mean, you're talking about like a real dough. But again, you're talking about Rice Krispies that are being held within the fluff, not so much that they're being at least necessarily held together. We'll see. It'll become, if it's not an actual problem, it'll just become such a pain in the neck. That's really what we try to do with Ochel Shabbos. We say that, no, really nothing is usher. It's just such a pain in the neck that you're not going to want to do it anyway. That's how we win. So that all deals with, again, introducing liquid to solid, introducing liquid to crumbs. That's stage number one. Stage number two, again, becomes the second element of the process of lush, which is actually like really combining them, like really, really mixing them, really stirring them together. There again, we need to have a shinui. So what does that shinui look like? And this is really, this again is going to be, if you can get this done, then what might otherwise be lush will become mutter. The question is it worthwhile? Is it worth it? Number one, and this is considered to be, well, let's start here. Number one is that you do it a bit at a time. Very, very little bit at a time. When does that apply? When what you're doing is a significantly smaller measure than whatever you would ordinarily do, right? So meaning if you're trying to combine two large quantities of things, then you do a very, very little bit at a time. I can't make hot cocoa mix and say that I'm really just mixing a little bit at a time because it's only one packet. It's not like I'm making it for my whole family. It's a single serving. It's one packet out of a box of, 16 or whatever. That's a little bit at a time. That's not a little bit at a time. That's one serving size. It's exactly how much you mix when you ordinarily prepare however much is supposed to be prepared. That's what you ordinarily do. But with me doing a much smaller amount at a time, if you have, let's say, like mixing two different dips together, let's say, would that be the case? But maybe this is the case. Maybe you have, sort of like on the side of your plate, you're mixing hummus and matbucha together, right? Something like that. So matbucha is really runny. It's probably not, it's certainly not like its own gush yet. And now you're stirring them together. Those little bits of like tomato and garlic and whatever are now being held together by this more pasty kind of hummus. That can really be a problem of lush. So let's say just do a very, very small little bit at a time. That might be okay. But the question is it worth it? Is it worth it, right? Like if you're doing less than whatever a typical serving size is, so you're just doing it barely like at the corner of your plate, and then you're doing that every single time. So you could, you pick up a little bit, of one with your fork, a little bit the next with your fork, and you give it a tiny little swirl, and then you spread on your challah. That would be okay. Again, I'm not even sure that that's a great example with respect to it even being really lush in the first place. It depends on what the actual ingredients, particles, pieces, and the like look like. The other one, you may have heard this before, is crisscross, right? Shesi va'erev, crisscross. So the way that this is done is not, meaning ordinarily the way that I stir is by swirling around. So instead I go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. What that means is basically one stroke in one direction, one stroke in approximately the other direction, but removing the spoon or the fork in between. This is really a pain in the neck. It can be done, but it's really a pain in the neck. So, yeah, like, you start thinking about these kinds of things, and does that mean that you could make hot cocoa on Shabbos the way that I like to make my hot cocoa? You could, in theory. It just might become such a pain that I don't know that it's really worth it anymore. You might just want to, like, grin and bear it, you know, deal with, like, the when those bubbles explode and there's still, like dry powder inside the... Anybody? Okay, these things infuriate me. Never mind. So you just, you know, you go like crisscross and crisscross and crisscross and crisscross. It's like a pain in the neck. Just make a cup of coffee and pour in some chocolate soy milk. That's in a, you know, a chocolate syrup, whatever. Pour in a little, you know, Fox's You Bet into your into the hot water. But those kinds of things, Is it kedai and is it worthwhile? So another one, chrenes, right? So you start off with chren. And you have individual pieces of beet, right? Maybe even horseradish also, right? That are like suspended in this liquid. It's not really gush ech. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. But certainly you're combining those particles together once you introduce the mayonnaise, which is that much more thick, right? So now you have the individual particles of the chrein that are really sticking together that much more. That would ultimately make a blila raka, thin consistency. So got to figure out in the first place if there's a way of doing it in a backhanded kind of way. Probably the chrein first, mayo afterwards. Seems like that would be the reverse. And then doing like a crisscross and a crisscross and a crisscross. Again, is that worth it or is that just such a pain in the neck that you don't necessarily want to even bother employing that? And where this might also come up is with respect to tuna and egg salad. So I don't come back to that. Final issue of the night, tuna and egg salad. So, again, you're dealing with a belila ava, but because the liquid that you're introducing is really mayo, it's a thick liquid in the first place. Not really a liquid at all, but it's a thick kind of medium. So we avoid the issue of belila ava never being able to, the two ingredients never being able to be even introduced to one another in the first place of belila ava. That we avoid because we're dealing with mayo as opposed to dealing with olive oil or something like that. Then it comes to actually combining those elements. So do you want to bother like crisscrossing like the tuna or in the egg salad, or is that just such a pain in the neck that it's no longer worthwhile? Some suggest, and this would probably be more applicable, there's a lot of Torah on egg salad, because egg salad has a long, long mesorah, believe it or not, as ridiculous as that sounds, has a long mesorah in Jewish history, and Shabbos in particular. It's like been a shalashudas food for decades and having it for centuries and having it with you know, like liver and eggs has been a long-standing Jewish thing. So this is discussed by Poskim as to why exactly it's mutter. One of the speculations is that it could be that we would say that this is really just, coming back to something of a Bora term, that this effectively is really like derech achila. That if you're adding something because of the flavor as opposed to the consistency, or not just the consistency, it's not just as a thickening agent, it's not just to bind it, but it's because it also makes the makes everything taste that much better, maybe there's room to be said for that being mutter on Shabbos. If it can be avoided, it's certainly worthwhile. If it can be done either with like the crisscross or just making it ahead of time, Baruch Hashem. Because we have refrigeration today, a lot of these things can be really, really well avoided through just planning and thinking about what you're going to have over the course of Shabbos. And also, Baruch Hashem, we have so much variety, we have so much food that we can usually avoid having like a dish or two because there's so much else going on and so much else available.
Decades, decades and decades ago.
I don't know if they had met. I don't know. I mean, the answer is yes. Not Hellman's, but yeah. I mean, beating eggs with oil. You know, they had.
But that's thin. Huh? I guess it doesn't matter, even though that's thinner.
I mean, then using that. Well, that's what mayo is.
Right.
Mayo is oil, eggs, and maybe like a little vinegar. I don't know, whatever else keeps it. And then whatever gunk they put into the light mayo that we get, paint thinner, and I don't know. Plaster. But that's basically what it is. Could be that in the first place, they're dealing with oil, and maybe it's a little different. The thing with the egg salad also is that it becomes much more thick because the yolk sort of dissolves into the liquid. But then, by the way, if that's the case, then getting past the initial issue of even just introducing the two ingredients to one another in the first place would be more problematic. That's not necessarily mutter. But if you were mixing with oil, that would be more problematic than, let's say, mixing it with mayo. either way you get into the issue after the fact, mixing with oil, it strikes me anyway, would be a little bit easier if you're just trying to do like a crisscross. Like it'll become more easily incorporated a little bit more quickly. Probably less so if you're dealing with mayo. So there is some grounds for being mayo when it comes to egg salad. We didn't even talk about actually chopping the eggs in the first place, but there is some grounds for kula when it comes to egg salad with respect to lush. If it can be avoided, it seems like it's probably worthwhile. Same with tuna. Try to make these things, you know, ahead of time.
How about like mashing bananas?
Mashing bananas is really more of an issue of tochein than an issue of lush, but I'm glad you brought it up because let's assume that it's mashed in the first. If you mash it in a roundabout way, we'll get to this, maybe we'll do tochein next even, then you'd probably be okay. And then, let's say, adding water, liquid, something like that to it, that is already really just diluting it further. Right, so from a lush perspective, you'd really be okay.
Like guacamole?
Guacamole, putting, yeah, maybe something like that.
And then you're adding liquid.
Right, you might have a tochein. Might have a tochein issue. You'd probably have a tochein issue. I don't think you'd have a lush issue. You have a lush issue. What would happen? Yeah, you're putting in lemon juice. You're really just diluting that, it already clings to itself. It already is what it is, right? It's a paste, right? Adding liquid to it is really only going to...
It makes it creamier.
Yeah, it's going to, like, dilute it, right?
But it's for flavor.
Yeah. Right. Also true, right? Meaning if... Once you go that route, that, like, opens up a lot of other potential heterim, it seems like an after-the-fact kind of explanation. Like, people seem to be doing this. What's the explanation? It's hard to know when to apply that and when to not. I mean, I could say that anything really is for the purpose of enjoying it more and enjoying the flavor more. When do you say so? When do you say not? But at least when it comes to those particular dishes, it sounds like there's something of a history in doing so. If it can be avoided, especially with modern day refrigeration and the like, it seems well worthwhile.
Like mashed potatoes.
Yeah.